Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Malcolm Armstead's review of The World's Greatest Short Story. Last summer, one of the outstanding programs in this series featured one of the most famous poems in the English language, The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. Since then, there have been many, many requests to repeat this show. In answer to your insistence, ladies and gentlemen, we present once again The Raven with special music written by Don Gillis. And here is Nelson Armstead.
Thank you, and good evening. Before we begin, let us all understand one very important fact. It is certainly with no little trepidation that I read one of the best known and least understood of the great poems of America, The Raven. To say that The Raven is difficult to understand is a beautiful understatement. Only after reading and rereading many times can a person begin to visualize what Poe meant in this poem. And then most everyone disagrees in at least one or two points. Edgar Allan Poe lived a life of disappointment. Nothing was right from the beginning. His talent was great and his fame was acclaimed during his time, but a bad temper and an unfortunately close affinity with liquor never allowed him to retain any financial security throughout his stormy 40 years. He was temperamental, self-centered, sure of himself, contemptuous of the world, and he must have felt life deeply and passionately. The Raven was written in 1844, was first published in 1845. It immediately created a furor among American and English readers, bringing to Poe a fame which he never lost. The Raven concerns Poe himself, a coal black raven, and a lost Lenore, who many believe was Poe's wife, who was in poor health, and whose death he must have foreseen. This bird, the raven, came tapping at the window at midnight in the dreary December, and when allowed to enter, displayed a supernatural ability to speak one word, nevermore. Poe believed it was an omen, and asked the raven when he was to see his lost Lenore in heaven, to which came the famous answer, nevermore. It is my opinion that Poe meant that the raven, black in its color, represented his own soul or conscience, which he realized had sunk to degradation and was headed for hell. In other words, to all his questions, his own conscience answers back, nevermore. Listen to this well-rhymed poem and see if that's not your interpretation. Once upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping as of someone gently rapping at my chamber door. "To some visitor," I muttered, "tapping at my chamber door, only this and nothing more." Distinctly I remember it. It was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow. Vainly I had sought to borrow from my book surcease of sorrow. Sorrow for the lost Lenore. For the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore. Nameless here forevermore. And the silken, sad, uncertain rustling of each purple curtain filled me with fantastic terrors never felt before. So that now, to still the beating of my heart, I stood repeating, "To some visitor, entreating entrance at my chamber door." some late visitor entreating entrance at my chamber door. This it is, and nothing more. Presently my soul grew stronger. Hesitating then no longer, "Sir," said I, "or madam, truly your forgiveness I implore. But the fact is, I was napping, and so gently you came rapping, and so faintly you came tapping, tapping at my chamber door, that I scarce was sure I heard you. Here?" I opened wide the door. Darkness there, and nothing more. Deep into that darkness peering, long I stood there wondering, fearing, doubting, dreaming dreams no mortal ever dared to dream before. But the silence was unbroken, and the stillness gave no token. And the only word there spoken was the whispered word, "Lenore." This I whispered, and an echo murmured back the word, "Lenore." Merely this, and nothing more. Then, into the chamber turning, with all my soul within me burning, soon again I heard a tapping, something louder than before. "Surely," said I, "surely that is something at my window lattice. Let me see then what thereat is, and this mystery explore. Let my heart be still a moment, and this mystery explore. 'Tis the wind and nothing more." Open here I flung the shutter, when with many a flirt and flutter, in there stepped a stately raven of the saintly days of yore. Not the least obeisance made he, not an instant stopped or stayed he, but mien of lord or lady, perched above my chamber door. Perched upon the bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door. Perched, and sat, and nothing more. Then this ebony bird beguiling my sad fancy into smiling, by the grave and stern decorum of the countenance it wore. "Though thy crest be shorn and shaven, thou," I said, "are sure no craven, ghastly, grim, an ancient raven wandering from the nightly shore. Tell me what thy lordly name is on the night's Plutonian shore." Quoth the raven, "Nevermore." Much I marvel this ungainly fowl to hear discourse so plainly, though its answer little meaning, little relevancy bore. For we cannot help agreeing that no living human being ever yet was blessed with seeing bird above his chamber door. Bird or beast upon the sculptured bust above his chamber door. With such a name as Nevermore. But the raven, sitting lonely in that placid bust, spoke only that one word, as if his soul in that one word he did outpour. Nothing further then he uttered, not a feather then he fluttered, till I scarcely more than muttered, "Ever friends have flown before. On the morrow he will leave me, as my hopes have flown before." Then the bird said, "Nevermore." Startled at the stillness broken by a reply so aptly spoken, "Doubtless," said I, "what it others is its only stock and store. Caught from some unhappy master, whom unmerciful disaster followed fast and followed faster, till his songs one burden bore. Till the dirges of his hope, the melancholy burden bore of never, nevermore." But the raven, still beguiling all my sad soul into smiling, straight I wheeled a cushioned seat in front of the bird and bust and door. Then upon the velvet sinking, I betook myself to linking fancy unto fancy, thinking what this ominous bird of yore, what this grim, ungainly, ghastly, gaunt, and ominous bird of yore meant in croaking nevermore. This I sat engaged in guessing, but no syllable expressing to the fowl whose fiery eyes now burned into my bosom's core. This and more I sat divining, with my head at ease reclining on the cushion's velvet lining that the lamplight gloated o'er, but whose velvet violet lining with the lamplight gloating o'er, she shall press, nevermore. Then methought the air grew denser, perfumed from an unseen censer swung by seraphim, whose footfalls tinkled on the tufted floor. Wretch, I cried, thy God hath lent thee, by the angels he hath sent thee respite and nepenthe from thy memories of Lenore. Quaff, oh, quaff this kind nepenthe, and forget this lost Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still if bird or devil, whether tempter sent, or whether tempest tossed thee here ashore. Desolate yet all undaunted on this desert land enchanted, on this home by horror haunted, tell me truly, I implore, is there balm in Gilead? Tell me, I implore. Quoth the raven, nevermore. Prophet, said I, thing of evil, prophet still if bird or devil, by that heaven that bends above us, by the God we both adore, tell this soul with sorrow laden, if within the distant Aden it shall clasp a sainted maiden whom the angels name Lenore, clasp a rare and radiant maiden whom the angels name Lenore. Quoth the raven, nevermore.
Be that bird our sign of parting, bird of fiend, I shrieked upstarting. Get thee back into the tempest and the night's plutonian shore. Leave no black plume as a token of the lie thy soul hath spoken. Leave my loneliness unbroken. Quit the bust above my door. Take thy beak from out my heart, and take thy form from off my door. Quoth the raven, nevermore.
And the raven, never flitting, still is sitting. Still is sitting on the pallid bust of Pallas, just above my chamber door. And his eyes have all the seeming of a demon that is dreaming. And the lamplight o'er him streaming throws his shadow on the floor. And my soul, from out that shadow that lies floating on the floor, shall be lifted. Nevermore.
The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe. Ladies and gentlemen, at the repeated requests of listeners to this program, we have again presented one of the greatest poems that America knows. Now for a closing word, here is Nelson Olmsted.
Before we close this program, let me say that the special music was written by one of the outstanding young composers of the Southwest, Don Gillis, director of the famous TCU band. To him, to Gene Ball, who directed the music into the orchestra, we owe a debt of gratitude. Remember, we should be most flattered if you will write us your reaction to our presentation of The Raven. Thank you, good night, and good reading.
WBAP presents Nelson Olmsted in a review of the world's greatest short stories every Sunday night at 10 o'clock. Be sure to write
Your reaction to tonight's reading of The Raven. Special music was composed by Don Gillis. The orchestra was conducted by Gene Ball.